It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Te mari, Rachel. I'm pretty good, thanks. Yet another week in level three, but it's an uncertain time, and I think people are feeling pretty unsettled about that. We were pleased that the numbers didn't soar yesterday, but we don't know what's going to happen today. So it's that sort of time for Auckland. I think the rest of the country will be feeling pretty confident that maybe they've got on top of the problems. The One and Bay of Plenty has been ruled out. Mm-hmm. Northland and Waikato, no new cases, but you can't say that there aren't undetected cases. But in Auckland, we are working to contain, and that means getting vaccinated and following the rules.
Mm.
So that's the summary of it seems to dominate my life and probably everybody else's.
Yes.
At the moment. We all listen out for those figures, and we just long for the time when we can get some normality and we can focus on the other things in life that we'd like to be concentrating on.
Well, it has been interesting. It's been noted that in the last 7 days, particularly, I mean, the whole country's had to get used to this and will have to get used to this, but particularly in Auckland, we are feeling it quite acutely. It's a big mentality shift from this concept of total elimination to this catching up with where the rest of the world is at the moment with the sort of constant suppression of Delta in the community. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what that's going to mean for a future space, because that's something we have to start thinking about now, particularly when we're talking about vaccine passports and recently this week rapid antigen testing, which we're going to see introduced into hospitals very soon. But also that's something that we might see more broadly used as a tool in the community as we move forward in the months after we are able to leave this lockdown. Now, as the mayor, what are your sort of thoughts about how we might use those two tools in particular when people are trying to access facilities around the city here in Tāmaki Makaurau?
Well, I think those two tools are important, and also important is the new morning after, if I can use that reference, pill, the molnupiravir that reduces hospitalisations and deaths if you apply it to people that have caught COVID already early on. It halves the rate of hospitalisation and death, which is pretty important. Look, I think the new initiatives are important. We have moved, I guess, from the idea that we could stamp it out, because clearly we haven't been able to in Auckland, and there's a limit to, you know, how many weeks you can lock everything down at level four with massive economic loss, massive personal and financial and emotional costs involved with it. And we were going to be moving there anyway, as the government foreshadowed, to a situation where we would live with COVID, but we wanted to have maximum vaccination, and we wanted to have a situation where we knew that we could cope with it and minimise
deaths. So when we do get to that space where we are able to have people with a bit more freedom in the community, obviously we've got a long way to go before we get there. Do you envisage that we will see those tools that we've been talking about, particularly rapid antigen testing and also vaccine passports, being regularly used in council facilities in Tāmaki Makaurau? Is that something that you foresee happening, or is that something that's in discussion at the moment?
Yeah, look, rapid antigen testing, you get the results really quickly. You pay a slight price on that they're less sensitive and they are not quite as good at picking up, 100% whether a person has got the virus or not. But in situations where you need a rapid test, that's going to be an important tool. The vaccine passports, I think, will also be an important tool, in part because that's kind of one of the things that will finally persuade people who are hesitant but not anti-vax to say, hey, I should just go out and do it. It means that if you can't hop on a plane to fly somewhere, if you can't go to a concert, you can't go to a big event, or you can't, you know, and this is what's happened in Europe, if you can't go to and in Sydney at the moment, if you can't go to a bar or a restaurant and you want to, but you haven't got the vaccine passport or the vaccine certificate, then you're going to think, am I really against getting this, or should I just get it and be done with it?
Is it something that we might see in council facilities, though, in the future,
well,
as a requisite for entry to big public spaces, for example?
Yeah, that's the sort of discussion that's going on at the moment, because what we're looking at is things like the museum, the art gallery, the zoo, MOTAT, you know, all of those sort of things, and anything that we might put on at the Civic Theatre or some of the other council facilities. One, do we then require our public-facing staff to be mandated as having to be vaccinated?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the government has mandated hospital and education workers, but hasn't gone beyond that. And it's not just those workers that I've just nominated, but it's also things like bus drivers. So we're looking for a signal from government whether their expectation is that we and other people move in that area. And of course, if you don't let somebody into an event because they're not double vaccinated, then to be consistent, you can't have staff working there that aren't double vaccinated. And we've got to make a decision and we've got till the vaccine passport comes in, I guess, whether we are going to require our staff to be mandated, who are public-facing in their roles, and whether we will require visitors to our major, things like the museum and the art gallery, also to be double vaccinated. Clearly, for big events, that will be a requirement. If you're going to, I can't believe that if you've still got COVID in the community, you're going to have 50,000 people at Eden Park and a lot of people wandering around there that aren't double vaxxed and maybe carrying the illness. So, yeah, those are the ways in which we as an organisation will have to adapt. But every organisation is now facing those decisions, unless the government decides to make a more general mandating rule, which they haven't been prepared to do so, weren't prepared to do so yesterday, but they have done it for teachers, early childhood and health.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about those vaccine mandates that we have seen. It's been, particularly in the education sector, well received by the unions at this point. Are you hearing much feedback in your role as well? I mean, we have a lot of people who work with young folks in council spaces, libraries and situations like that. Is that something that the council is discussing or thinking about at the moment as a sort of extension of the education part of this mandate? Is that something that you'll be thinking about at the moment?
Yeah, librarians are another one of those categories of public-facing staff that we will have to make a decision on. There will be some legal questions. We're not yet sure actually whether we legally, short of a public health order, have the ability to do that. And that's got to be figured out, just as the vaccine passport issue has to be figured out. And I think what I'm hearing back on from parents, they think it's a great idea that the teachers are vaccinated, and we're hearing from the teacher unions that they support that. What we haven't heard yet is the hard end of this, and we're starting to hear it, for example, in regard to midwives. Is okay. So what if 20 midwives decide no, it's totally against their belief to be vaccinated, and they walk away from the profession when you already have a shortage? Now, that's the downside of mandating, and we've still got to deal with the practical implications of that. While obviously most of us are supporting in principle the idea that, hey, if you're bringing a baby into the world, we want the midwife to be vaccinated, so there's less likely that she is carrying the virus. But we haven't worked out how to deal with the practical difficulties if people say, okay, no, it's not a case of I'm hesitant, I'm just anti it. I don't believe that it's the right thing to do, therefore I'm going to walk away from the profession. That'll be one of the downside costs of making that decision. That's not to say that they shouldn't have made the decision. I believe they did the right thing.
Well, let's talk a wee bit about something completely unrelated to COVID for a minute, which we haven't had time to really touch base on in the last couple of weeks with so much COVID news coming out. But it is the Auckland Harbour Bridge bike path, which has been cancelled. We're not going to be seeing this. Now, how do you personally feel about this announcement?
Well, I felt that it was inevitable when the idea failed to win public support. I think the polls were reflecting about 80% of people against it, and not even the biking fraternity were keen on doing that as a priority for expenditure on cycleways. So, look, in one sense, it's a real pity, because I think people would have loved walking and cycling across a bridge. But they simply said they looked at the price, and I looked at the price and, you know, had the same sort of doubts and said, hey, this is the best way to spend $780 million. And the minister, I think to pretty much to his credit, said, hey, you can't do things that you don't have public support for, and the public have spoken, and I'm listening to what the public has said, and there are other priorities. And the upside for us in Auckland is that we'll get a number of new cycleways, including some important links to cycleways that will now be able to be funded. We'll get the Eastern Busway, probably about $230 million worth of work brought forward on that, so that we can get a decent public transport system, rapid transit system out to the east. So there's an upside for us. What do we then do? Because they're going to press ahead, as they should, with the Northern Pathway. So they're going to experiment with whether you can have buses fitted out to carry bikes as a transit across the bridge, ferries fitted out for bikes, so that people with, they won't be able to cycle all the way, but they'll be able to cycle to the harbour, hop on a ferry, hop on a bus, get their bike carried across, and then hop off at the other end. And in the short term, that may deliver more results more quickly. In the longer term, we're still left with the question, well, you know, we really would like to be able to cycle between the shore and the city centre, but not at that price. Maybe, you know, look, we've got to make a decision about the the Third Harbour crossing. Will that be a tunnel? Will that be a bridge? If it is a bridge, one of the original ideas I'd talked about is you might be able to have a busway plus a walk and cycle way that would be built and would justify the costs and in the public mind. So that's one of the options on the table still. Right. In the meantime, we get the use of some of that other money for some really important public transport projects that cut down emissions, cut down congestion.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Gough. It's always great to have you on the show, and no doubt there'll be plenty more to talk about next week as well, as we see sort of new updates every day at the moment. But in the meantime, we just keep doing what we're supposed to do and keep on keeping on. Thanks for speaking with us.
Look forward to the good news, and one of the good news things is that we'll hit about 90% lakes full. Remember how we used to talk about whether we're going to get through the next drought?
Yes.
Hey, well, we've solved that problem. We've now got just another little thing called COVID that we've got to get on top of.
Well, okay. we'll look forward to getting on top of that one. Hey, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.
Thank you.